If Batman were to live in a national park, he'd definitely live at Carlsbad Caverns. I'm Brad.
And I'm Matt. And we sold our home in Chicago, bought an RV, and we live on the road full time.
Just us and our dog, Finn. And we're visiting our national parks.
This is Parklandia, and we're heading underground to the original Batcave at Carlsbad.
Thanks for listening. Batman would feel right at home in the enormous pitch-black chambers of Carlsbad Cavern in New Mexico. Just him and a couple hundred thousand of his roommates who fly out to eat bugs each night. There are so many bats here that when they fly out of the cave's natural entrance each evening at sunset, they swirl around in this gigantic tornado shape, and they look like a dark cloud. It's ominous and overwhelming to behold. And like a park ranger said that night, it's an iconic national park sight to see right up there with Old Faithful at Yellowstone.
Oh, yeah, I would agree with that sentiment. There really is nothing like the bat migration at Carlsbad Caverns. For anyone squeamish around bats, this probably isn't for you, because the idea of sitting under a cloud of 200,000 bats probably would give you nightmares. But for anyone else, it's really stunning, and just seeing them swarm out quietly into the sky for what seems like hours is really, really incredible. It's essentially one giant feeding frenzy, though. It's like a bunch of hungry diners at a buffet just feasting for hours and hours and hours. But instead of Eggs Benedict or prime rib, it's moths and mosquitoes on the menu. They fly around for miles and up into the sky for several thousand feet even to get their food.
That's a lot of effort for dinner. I'd rather just order Grubhub. Ugh,
same. I can't imagine. Like, whenever I'm ordering Grubhub and wanting sushi, like, if I were to travel 30 miles and 10,000 feet into the sky, no thanks. The coolest part of the whole bat migration, though, is just how mysterious these animals are, I think. Like, there are so many unanswered questions and just mysteries about how they act the way they do, why they act the way they do. The ranger who was leading the back talk when we were there, he was talking about how these bats, which are Mexican free-tailed bats, they only live here in Carlsbad from mid-April through about mid-October. So not much is known about their migration and like where they stay along the way as they're going back and forth to Mexico.
Yeah, my guess is a Motel 6 or maybe an all-nighter.
Yeah, who knows? There's like a bat Airbnb or something. I don't know.
You know, they are apparently quite ugly, though.
Yeah, so don't get too close.
Yeah, you can't see them up close, though, since they're so small and they're flying so fast. But the ranger said that's the reason why a lot of people are afraid of bats is because of their, like, gnarly faces. I mean, it's okay, though. I know they're beautiful on the inside.
Yeah, that's what matters. Of course, these things aren't about to win any beauty pageants, but in spite of that, they are really incredible animals, and you have to respect that and just admire it, because for one thing, in like a single night, these bats can eat half their body weight in insect, which is crazy. They're starving, clearly.
I did name one of them Batty Boo Boo, though.
Oh, yeah. That's sweet.
She was so cute.
Yeah. The whole colony each night can eat up to 3 tons of food. That's a dizzying amount of food to imagine. And by night's end, they all kind of return back into the cave by dawn, swirling around in that tornado-like shape formation. And then they sleep all day, hanging upside down from the cave ceiling, just chilling.
Sounds like me.
Sounds great. But the other thing that the ranger told us that I thought was so shocking and kind of hard to imagine is these bats are so small that up to 300 of them can be squeezed together in 1 square foot of ceiling space. That's crazy and also kind of horrifying to imagine. I don't want to see that.
Yeah, you know, there's another amazing thing about how these bats helped Carlsbad Caverns get discovered in the first place. Even though Native Americans apparently spent time in the cave more than 1,000 years ago, it wasn't fully explored until the late 1800s. When the settlers saw a black cloud of smoke rising from the earth.
Yep, except, surprise, surprise, that black cloud was not smoke at all. It was actually bats exiting the cave, and they did so in such a thick, condensed crowd that from a distance, it looked like this plume of smoke just seemingly rising out of the ground.
Caves.
So Jim White is the guy who's credited as the cave's main explorer. He discovered the cave in 1898. He explored, went in like a brave, curious little man.
A pioneer.
Yeah. That's another more appropriate term. And he's the one who named a bunch of the rooms and formations down in Carlsbad Caverns, like King's Palace Room, Green Lake Room, Bottomless Pit, Iceberg Rock, and Big Room.
Real creative on that one, Jim. I mean, it definitely earns the name there, since the Big Room is actually gigantic.
Yeah, yeah. From what we read, that you could fit 2 U.S. Capitol buildings inside this room, and that's unbelievable. It's the 7th largest cave chamber in the world.
And it's the one and only chamber that you can tour on your own. It's a long 1.25-mile route around the perimeter of this gigantic chamber. I mean, it's filled with enormous formations and features like the Lion's Mane and the Hall of Giants. I mean, oh, and I can't forget the Bottomless Pit, which isn't actually bottomless, but it definitely looks ominous.
Yes, it definitely does.
The Big Room has lights along the trail, which is pretty nice because it's well-paved the whole way, making it easy to see where you're going and see all the unique formations along the route.
Yeah, fortunately for those lights. Otherwise, we'd be stumbling into the bottomless pit, and that wouldn't end well.
I feel like you're going to die by falling off a cliff or down a pit.
I'm always,
you're always so worried.
I'm always so close to falling to my death. So let's talk about how we got to the Big Room, because I thought that was probably my favorite aspect of Carlsbad Caverns.
Such a cool entrance.
Yeah, we got here by way of the natural entrance, which starts at the amphitheater where the bats migrate. So before the evening, before sunset, when the bats come out, this natural entrance is open for people to make their way down into the cave the old-fashioned way by zigzagging down this long paved pathway. Gets pretty steep. It takes a little while to complete. It's fairly strenuous, but not as much when you're going down because it's mostly just gravity doing most of the work. It's just really cool, though, because you're immersing yourself the way that Jim White and the initial explorers did, just surrounded by sudden darkness and leaving the natural light behind.
Yeah, I mean, as you make your way down the cave, you'll enter, to various, sprawling rooms. I mean, the whole experience feels more like a movie, and it seems to be wild, to be just real.
It's very wild. It's very surreal. And I feel like every corner you turn along this natural entrance trail, it just bursts open to these extravagant new rooms with amazing views and features. It's just breathtaking, really. Speaking of breathtaking features, I want to talk about one of my favorite formations along the natural entrance route, which is, it's called Whale's Mouth, and it's a giant rock face that kind of looks like this huge whale rising out of the water, maybe like a blue whale or something huge. And I think the thing that I connect with so much here is that when I was a kid, I actually made a connection with a whale. And my parents...
Really?
Yeah.
Tell me more.
I know. Buckle up, because this gets weird. My parents let me do one of those adopt-a-whale programs, which I don't know if they still exist. I'm assuming they do. And
You've never told me this.
I got to flip through, this catalog or something and, adopt-a-whale. And I don't even know what was involved with it. I was a little kid. My parents probably handled the logistics. But anyway, I adopted a humpback whale named Midnight, and I loved Midnight. She was like this mostly black humpback whale. I think she lived probably in the Atlantic somewhere. I don't know. But anyway, I would always tell people, strangers or people would ask naturally, oh, do you have any pets? And I would say, yeah, we have our dog, Nikki, and I have a whale named Midnight. And people probably thought I was so crazy, and they would look at my parents probably like, what? But I loved Midnight, and Midnight honestly is probably still alive today. Whales live a really long time. So I think technically I still have a whale. We have a whale in our family.
I had no clue, and I love this, but you are literally justifiably insane.
I love whales, and I love whale-shaped cave formations. What can I say?
Oh, man. We'll put those next to my cats, Mystic and Majestic.
Yeah.
Mystic, Majestic,
perfect.
And Midnight.
And Midnight. Love you. Anyway, back to the natural entrance trail. At the end, once you're done kind of making your full descent into the cave, you've gone about 800 feet down, which is, as the sign points out, that's kind of the equivalent of hiking down the Empire State Building. It's quite a trek.
Yeah, it's a lot easier to go down. I mean, that's what a lot of people do, the normal people do.
Yeah.
But it's much tougher to go up. And we decided we want to do it both ways. I mean, it was really funny to watch the people's reaction as we're coming back up and are you really going up?
People,
I can't believe it.
People were reacting like we were crazy. Like, I didn't see any other people going up with us at the time. There were still a bunch of people coming down when we were making the trek out. And this must have been, like, 6 or 7 different people who made comments being like, oh, are you hiking out? We're like, yeah, it's not that insane.
Yeah, and they're like, do you know there's an elevator at the bottom? And we're like, yes.
Yes, we heard about like, the elevator.
I mean, like, it was tough going up, but, like, I could handle it. And I'm a little bit more out of shape for hiking in regards to this than I used to be. But it's definitely possible if you're in decent shape.
Yeah, I thought you did great, too. We made good time. We, like, it seemed to me like we went up the trail faster than we went down, probably because we're stopping to take photos a lot on the way down. On the way out, we're kind of familiar enough that we're like, okay, we don't need to stop at the whale's mouth again.
Yeah, but it was definitely amazing to like jump up there and just like, just do it. You know, just like a little feat.
It felt good.
It's only the Empire State Building, you know.
Yeah, like, it's only like going up and down the Empire State Building twice a day. Yeah, it was good. But I want to talk also about kind of the full body experience involved, because it's more than just like feeling in your muscles. You smell things, you see things obviously along this trail, and it's really quite immersive.
Yeah, I mean, everything kind of just shifts as you walk further into the cave. Pretty much as soon as you leave the amphitheater, things start to smell weird, mostly from the bat doo-doo, or as you like to say.
Bat guano. I think the first time I heard the term bat guano was probably in an Ace Ventura movie.
Ooh,
and do you remember?
Shout out to Jim Carrey.
Yeah,
yes.
I'm pretty sure that was from an Ace Ventura movie. And it stuck with me, and now I'm very familiar.
Good job. Good job, Jim. Good job. Hey, there's a lot of Jims.
Oh, yeah, right.
Things obviously get increasingly dark, and the temperature levels, like, drop out to around the mid-50s. It's actually quite comfortable if you're wearing, like, a light jacket or a sweater. Like,
right.
Unless you're going up, then you take off those layers. But we're working our way down the cave now. So.
Yeah. It's actually also really comfortable if you're wearing a bat suit.
Ooh, or whatever that spandex thing that Robin wears, you know? Oh.
Yes. This is perfect superhero spandex climate.
Yeah. Cute butts.
Yes.
Wear.
Especially the ones from that, like, Batman and Robin movie where Batman had inexplicable nipple marks on his suit.
Oh, gosh, yes.
That's what you need to be wearing here.
Oh, man. Yes.
Yeah. And keeping in this, like, cinematic, weird, inadvertent movie theme, I thought it was so cool to learn that the portion of the cave that's where there's still kind of a trickle of natural light as it's mixing in with the complete darkness, this apparently is called the Twilight Zone, because of course it is. And that this is, like, the phase of the cave where things are starting to get really, really kind of dark and eerie, but in a cool, like, exciting way that really draws you in further. And then things get really dark, and the only light anymore comes off light bulbs that line the walkway and illuminate the formations, kind of pointing things out for you.
Very dim light bulbs.
Very dim.
Sets the mood.
So you do have to keep a slow pace so you're not stumbling into things. Certain parts of the trail are darker than others, but for the most part, it's fairly straightforward. One thing to note here, we mentioned photos, but this is kind of hard to get good photos in the cave, just FYI, unless you have, like, a special camera with specific equipment designed for taking photos in the dark. But things don't really turn out on smartphones here, so it's one of those places where you witness it with your own eyes, and it's beautiful and mesmerizing, but things really just don't show up nearly as great in iPhone photos, and that's fine, too.
Yeah, well, you're just going to have to go and visit and see for yourself. I mean, you're going to miss out on a lot of things if you just look at other people's photos.
Yeah, I know. You have to experience it for yourself, and it's fine that you don't document it all on Instagram or whatever.
But don't put down your phones, because we're going to be right back to talk about how many times Matt has been at this national park. Hi, I'm Brad.
And I'm Matt. You're listening to Parklandia, and today we're talking about Carlsbad Caverns National Park, which evidently is one of my favorite national parks because I've been here 3 times.
Not one, not two, but 3 times.
Making it my most visited national park in the country. So, in other words, I'm kind of a Carlsbad Caverns pro, not to brag, but I'm probably qualified to be a park ranger here at this point, to be honest.
You would love to be a park ranger at Carlsbad Caverns. I mean, it's just kind of like your spirit park.
You mean like dark, ominous, and smelling like bat droppings? Yes.
Well, definitely, well, that's for sure.
Thank you. I first visited the park with my brother Brian and my friends Diana and Elena. This was back in 2016, kind of when I was getting into this like nature-themed vacation thing with friends and family. And we had this like week-long trip planned out.
You can call it what it is. It's an obsession.
It's an obsession. So we planned to end our trip with a couple of days in Carlsbad, and we were staying in this shared cozy little cabin at a nearby KOA campground. And while we were here, we had this full day. Our first day in Carlsbad Caverns, we booked this ranger-guided tour. We actually did two tours because we really wanted to maximize our time here.
It's those cave tours.
They're so great. Yeah, you have to do some cave tours while you're here. Although, just a heads up, they do fill up pretty quickly. So as far in advance as you can make them online, the better. Because you don't want to miss out on these.
Like I did.
I know. If you do it too last minute, then you're kind of out of luck. But there's still the big room. You can tour that on your own. But what we did here on our first day was the left-hand tunnel tour first. And the awesome thing about that is it's a lantern-lit tour. That is all the visitors holding their own lanterns as they kind of follow the ranger into the cavern.
Did you get one of those cool hats, you know, like we saw that you could buy there?
No.
No?
Oh, no.
That's a bummer. But you could have bought one.
I could have, but I don't know. It would mess up my hair. I want to look good for the bats, I guess. So this left-hand tunnel tour lasts about 2 hours, all lit by candlelight. So you're kind of experiencing this cave, like I said, the old-fashioned way. Like, this is what the original pioneers were seeing. It was all, like, by flickering candlelight. And we all gathered, congregated in the visitor center on the surface, and then all took the elevator down to the tour meeting area by there's, like, this underground cafe. And our ranger guide was really great. She was good at getting everyone to socialize and mingle and do some icebreakers. And she started things off by having everyone gather in this circle and introduce themselves. And for some reason, I was, like, immediately to her left while my brother and friends were, like, the opposite side of the circle. I don't know why I did my own thing. But
just standing there by yourself.
Yeah, awkwardly by myself.
In the corner.
Yeah. And so I was the first one to go and introduce myself. And she asked me to introduce myself, where I'm from, and then as an icebreaker, say what your favorite movie is. So I'm like, okay, sure. So I went, my name's Matt, I'm from Chicago, and I guess I would probably say Silence of the Lambs. And then this was immediately met with varied reactions of shock and laughter from the crowd.
What's
like,
the lotion?
Ooh, watch out for that guy. Everyone was like, I don't know if it was like fake rattled or everyone legitimately thought I would eat them while we're on the tour or something, but
I guess the theme of this episode is just verifying Matt's insaneness.
Yeah, maybe that's true, especially compared to like all the other movie answers were so sweet and family, like Finding Nemo and Star Wars, and I'm like, Silence of the Lambs. So it was off to a nice start. And the tour itself was actually super fun, very informative, and really neat to see it, like I said, bathed in candlelight and like nothing else. Really primitive. And also, weirdly, made me really hungry because our park ranger kept comparing all the cave formations to like different foods. She would go, this is cave popcorn. Doesn't it look like popcorn? And like, these are soda straws. And this is cave bacon. And she would like do all these comparisons. And granted, she was accurate. It actually did look like popcorn and bacon and soda straws and whatnot. And she even made, like, this obscure comparison at one point to something, one of the cave formations she said looked like one of those, like, marshmallowy chocolate snowballs that you would get in, like, gas stations, convenience stores, or whatever. Gosh. I loved those.
We really shouldn't have skipped lunch today. I'm hungry for cave bacon-flavored popcorn now.
I want one of those snowballs, like, yesterday. They're so good. But the hilarious thing too, she mentioned the snowballs and she was like, oh, but I wish I could eat them. I'm allergic to nuts or something. And I'm like, what? Coconut is not a nut. But anyway, her heart was in the right place and she was making me famished. And then my favorite moment of this tour was when she gathered everybody around in a big circle again. This time I was actually in my appropriate space next to my friends.
Oh, good.
And we ran around one by one, kind of putting our candles out. So increasingly the chamber we were in got darker and darker until the last person put their candle up and it was complete pitch darkness. And the point of this was to show us what the cave is like in its natural, pure state. And that's just complete nothingness, blackness. Like, you can't see your own hand in front of your face.
That is so crazy.
It's really crazy. Like, creepy, but also, when you're with people and stuff, you're fine. You're not, like, abandoned there in the dark cave. But, of course, I, again, kind of embarrassed myself because as we were, like, turning out all the candles, she also said, like, I want everyone to be completely quiet.
Shh.
And just, you know, appreciate the stillness and darkness of the cave. But for some reason, my body has like a visceral reaction to do the opposite thing. And as soon as the last candle went out, I started like loudly giggling uncontrollably. And I was making noise. And I'm sure everyone could hear me trying to stifle laughter. And then my brother started giggling. And it was humiliating. And I'm sure the ranger knew it was
me. I'm starting to imagine, like, when you start giggling when you see hummingbirds, like, you go,
same,
like, insane. And it's also my same reaction to seeing the bats exit the caves at night.
Yes, it's just pure giddiness, I guess. And that's all I can really chalk it up to. But, yeah, it's just crazy. And it was so much fun. And then she kind of slowly went around and lit all our candles back on, probably hating me at that point. But all in all, it was a really fun tour, really enlightening. And like I said, I was starving. So I think I went to the underground cafe and got like a yogurt parfait or something.
No cave flavored bacon popcorn?
Oh, no, that's actually, they should really upgrade the menu at that cafe and have like bacon and popcorn. Because when you're done with these tours, you're starving for those things.
I know, right?
Not
but
fair.
Seriously, that was a pleasant surprise, seeing that Carlsbad Caverns Cafe up at the National Park.
Oh, the cafe, yeah.
Not the museum.
The one in the Visitor Center.
Visitor Center.
It was amazing.
Thank
you. Like,
yeah.
Shockingly good. And, like, I wasn't expecting that at all. I usually don't. This was my third time at Carlsbad Caverns, and I had never stopped at that cafe before.
Yeah, and back at the Earth's surface, I mean, it's a lot nicer up there because you actually get, like, this counter-service cafe, and it uses real ingredients from local farms. I mean, they had their, like, pulled pork sandwiches and a prickly pear barbecue sauce. And then they had the chicken, green chili stew, and chips with the most delicious sauces.
Oh, yes. I know. So, so good. They didn't have any snowballs, though, which kind of sucked. But they did have fresh guacamole, which also was really good. I remember being like, wow, this is just so fresh, so
good.
Good
stuff.
I know, loved it.
Geology.
This is not a guacamole podcast, as you know, so I'm not going to spend too much time on that. Let's talk about how these cave chambers came to be originally, because contrary to all this popcorn talk, it didn't emerge from a microwave.
Didn't.
Yeah.
Oh, where did it start, though? Come on, tell me.
Tell you
I
want to
listen.
Yeah.
I want to hear.
It all started some 200 million years ago when these caves were actually part of a tropical sea. This, like, southern New Mexico, west Texas area was all submerged in this shallow sea. And then as climate steadily changed and landmass shifted, the water that was once here evaporated and left behind these limestone layers that ultimately would form the foundation of Carlsbad Caverns. As rain would trickle through the limestone and kind of slowly make its way underground, this rainwater would mix with other water that was doing the opposite, kind of rising back towards the surface, pressurized by hydrogen sulfide. And then when these two elements mixed, they created a sulfuric acid that could actually dissolve limestone, and this would gradually erode the earth into the cave chambers that are there today.
Slowly, though, right?
Very slowly.
Drip,
yeah.
By drip.
Like millions,
drop,
millions,
by drop.
Millions. Yeah. It's not a fast process at all. So this same process is also what forms the like cave popcorn, cave bacon, the stalagmites, stalactites. All of that is just a steady, long process that takes millions and millions of years, and then you're left with all these magnificent chambers and cave formations that look like convenience store snacks.
Yeah, rainwater is one of the most beautiful pieces of our existence. I mean, it just shapes so much of the cave.
It's incredible, like, how something seemingly so gentle and, like, ineffective can slowly do this. And these formations are gigantic. They're not dainty or minuscule at all. These rooms are huge, the size of football fields. And these formations are some of them are much larger than humans. So just putting that in perspective, imagining this is all, like, the process of tiny little droplets that are falling into place over, like we said, like hundreds of millions of years.
Trails.
I actually had to stay back while Matt was hiking. And we had to stay in the RV with Finn, which was beautiful. And I love that time by myself as well. But I had a lot of work to get done because at Burns Maplewood Farm, we were getting into the planning stages for several months. But now that I've gotten into the habit of getting rental cars with Matt, it's a good thing because we're able to take the car and explore on our own.
Yeah, I know. I actually can't believe it took us this long to actually get with it and understand that, like, oh, rental cars are a thing we could do. Because I get super restless, annoyingly restless otherwise, if I don't have my own option to do my own thing. I need to get out. And I'm, as everybody knows at this point, probably I'm obsessed with hiking and I can't stop moving.
That is for sure right there. I mean, that's, when I'm free, I love doing things together, like seeing the bat flight and take hikes along the natural entrance.
Yeah, two of the best things here, for sure. Another cool thing about the park, in one aspect that a lot of people don't even realize, is just the abundance of activities and things to do on the surface above the cave chambers at Carlsbad Caverns.
You've been here multiple times, and you still find new things and discover new things every time you go.
Every time, it's a new surprise. And this most recent time was my first exploring the surface and doing some of these surface trails, of which there are more than 50 miles of trails here, by the way. There's a lot.
Third time's a charm.
Yeah. I didn't do all 50, of course. That'd be crazy. But I did manage to make a dent, at least, and start to get a sense for what the surface at Carlsbad Caverns is like. And it's amazing. Like, no surprise, it's amazing. You're in the desert. It's very arid. They're mountainous. These aren't huge, looming mountains. These are kind of more like rolling hills. Pretty arid and sand and stone and rocky, very craggy, with cactuses and brush and stuff like that.
Very unassuming to having a huge cave there.
Yeah, very unassuming. As you're doing these trails, you would never know that, like, oh, there's these massive cave chambers beneath my feet that could contain two U.S. Capitol buildings. Who knew?
Yeah,
and all these bats.
Just crumble and fall, you know?
I know, yeah, exactly. Now, to get to most of the trails on the surface here, you have to drive along this extended loop called the Walnut Canyon Desert Drive. It's this long dirt road that's towards the top of these hills where the visitor center is.
And you were telling me that it's like you would not take the RV down there.
No, I don't think they're even allowed. I think it's one of those roads that's so narrow and inaccessible you can only get there via car. And the trailheads are like so far out in the loop that that's really your only option. You can't be walking there or riding a bike or anything. But as long as you have a car, like, we had this rental vehicle, then it was totally fine. And I took it out, and the first trail that I did was called Rattlesnake Canyon, which sounds kind of scary, but was really harmless. It's about 6 miles round trip into the Tuolumne Desert, and pretty strenuous, especially on the way back, because it's a steep ascent as you're returning to the car. But I loved it. I really got into it and hoofed it. And brought plenty of water because it's really sunny and hot, especially when you do it like mid-afternoon like I did. And just the stuff you see here is really delightful and surprising, again, because this is my third time at Carlsbad, and this is all eye-opening for me. Like, I had no idea this was up here. And it was fun to explore and see that and traverse some of this canyon. You get kind of pretty deep into the terrain, and when we were there, a lot of the cactuses were starting to blossom. So you had these bright yellow and pink flowers.
Pretty.
Oh, it was so gorgeous.
Pretty.
Yeah. Just really tranquil, too. I didn't see any other people on the trail. Fortunately, I didn't see any rattlesnakes either.
Good.
Yeah. No harm there. I will say on the way back I should have probably slowed down because on my way back to the car, for some reason I was like speed walking or speed hiking as I'm wont to do. And it was quite steep and I was so tired and so thirsty and I had long since chugged my water. So I was in a...
Chugging water, you know
that's
not good.
In a tired state. Yeah, no.
Wildlife.
But I remember when you came back from that, you picked me up so we can go to the Bat Fright program.
Yeah, totally. That was really fun. I'm glad that we made it for that.
Conveniently named, it is located at the Bat Flight Amphitheater. This is really delightful because I get to bring up bats again. And I remember the park ranger having the driest sense of humor. I mean, he was so entertaining to listen to because it was like listening to Ron Swanson from Parks and Rec.
Yeah, or like Ron Burgundy or something. I love the snark.
Yeah, maybe just like a hybrid.
Like the best of both Rons. Yes.
Ron de Ron.
He was great. And I didn't even know that there would be a park ranger or one of their bat flight programs because I know we're kind of early in the season. The bats were freshly back from their migration. So I didn't know when they would start back up again.
Yeah, and even the website said like they weren't going to start until the end of the month. And we're like, oh, we're going to miss
it. Yeah.
And then
narrowly, we would have only missed it by like a week, which would have been such a bummer.
I think the only reason why we actually went is because one night we saw all these cars coming out at the same time. So we figured, oh, they must be doing it.
Yes. And much to our delight, it all worked out and we got to learn all about these amazing creatures. And also one important aspect that he reminded us several times is...
Several.
Yeah, it's important. No electronic devices whatsoever are allowed... During the bat flight program, and in fact, he insists that you not only turn them on phones on airplane mode, but like completely off in a way. And this goes for not just phones, but like any other thing you might have, like cameras and I don't know what other pocket-sized electronics people might have these days.
No drones.
No. Oh, gosh, no.
That's all national crazy. Parks, but.
Right, yeah, that'd be especially awful. Because the thing is, the bats are really sensitive to light and stuff like that. So if things potentially flash and harm their eyes or scare them or whatnot, it could have serious repercussions, meaning like they might not come back to the cave. They might go somewhere else where they're not being harassed by camera flash.
Yeah, no, that can ruin their whole entire natural existence in that cave. You know, because their warm-up flights where they circle the cave entrance by the thousands quickly... And quietly, we got to watch as we do not disrupt them. But loud noises, talking, flashes on the cameras, anything like that can just ruin it for future generations.
Yeah, absolutely. And there's no fixing it. Once, if the bats disappear, they're not coming back. So don't ruin it.
Yeah. Like this is for the next 800 years of people.
Yeah.
And they should be protecting it for the 800 years after them.
Yeah, totally. Also, the really cool thing about the bat. Or a real benefit of that, of everyone putting their devices away and being quiet, is are you able to experience this amazing phenomenon in utter silence? And that just adds to the awe of the whole thing. The bats, all you really hear is this delicate light fluttering because their wings are so small and they're such lightweight animals that they're not like making big flapping noises like birds or anything. So you're just in this really silent, mesmerized state with these clouds of bats swarming above your head. It's really incredible, really.
It really is. I mean, we sat there for a good 45 minutes to an hour just watching them after they started flying out. Like, there was just hundreds of thousands of them, and it was so, so beautiful.
Yeah, I know. It really was. We were there for well into darkness. They go for a while. We left before the migration was even over. They were still coming out of the cave, and we were like, okay, we should probably call it a night.
This is Parklandia. Thank you for listening. We'll have more after a short break. I'm Brad.
I'm Matt. Welcome back to Parklandia.
My favorite.
Now it's time to go into one of our favorite segments of the podcast. What was our favorite part of this national park? But on this time, I want to say it together on a count of three or after the count of three. So it goes one, two, three, then answer.
Okay.
All righty. One, two, three. Bat
Lantern tour.
Whoa. Oh. I really thought we were going to be in sync on that.
Oh, did you?
And the fact that we aren't, it just shows you that I really, really missed out by not going on a tour.
I know. Ugh. Unfortunately. we'll have to do that next time. And then, I want to do that Lantern tour again. I would do that in a heartbeat. It was so much fun.
Yeah, we're going to have to plan that better next time. That was my fault. Well,
Yes, it was.
Because of that tour, one of the three things that I would definitely bring would be layers, because it gets cold as you go down into the cave. And I would love to do that tour, so I need to bring layers for my next trip. Definitely like 1 liter of water. It's surprisingly crazy how much water you drink from the hiking trails above, as you've noted. And then going down into the cave and back, there's just a lot of water consumption. But this is something that has come up in almost every three things to bring. So bring a lot of water. And then for me, we had to do laundry the last day, and which was really frustrating because they closed at like 7 and we just got it done on time. But I would definitely bring some quarters for the RV park laundry.
Mm, exciting stuff. The things that I would bring, first and foremost, make sure that you have a supply of snacks like popcorn and bacon and stuff, because you're going to want it after you do one of the tours, I assure you. The other thing, I would also really agree with the layers thing, because the temperature differential is big, especially if you visit during their prime, like summer months when it's really hot on the surface and then the temperature plummets to like the mid-50s. So you almost need to have like an outfit change. I recommend bringing like a light jacket or something. And I had like leggings on underneath my shorts. So there's a little flexibility there.
Matt's like Beyonce performance style of layers. He just strips them off throughout the day and
always
fabulously perfect.
I always appreciate that comparison. Thank you. and then I would say the third thing to bring would be maybe a copy of Silence of the Lambs, because it's going to put you in the mood.
Don't be a creep. Come on. Come on. I do love that movie. We watch it probably like
I stand
almost
by that.
Twice a year.
Yeah, I stand by that claim. It's my favorite movie. I don't care how many people in a cave laugh at me.
Yeah, it's really creepy. But, you know, now in regards to our dream vacation at Carlsbad Caverns, I think we both have our hearts set on doing a hands-on cave tour.
Yes, I would love to do that so much.
Yeah, I mean, the park has a couple of tours that they call wild caving, and these are not for the faint of heart, but they are for my heart, because I want to do it. I want to squeeze through them. I want to go through them. But then there's the spider cave tour, which I'm not...
Sounds scary.
Yeah, I'm like not all about that spider life. I mean, it's fine. And then there's the Hall of Gray White Giants.
Yeah. That one sounds less intimidating.
Yeah, the White Giant, I mean, just sounds like it's a big space, so it shouldn't be that hard, right?
Yeah. Although, I mean, from what it sounds like, both of these are basically spelunking. Like, you're squeezing and crawling, and you're in narrow spaces for a while. There are long tours, too, compared to, like, the other ones. These are, like, 4 hours.
So don't be fooled by the name. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, kind
of. Because it requires crawling through, you know, squeezing into tight spaces. Mm-hmm. I mean, you'll probably get dirty, right?
You'll get dirty.
I love it.
Yes.
Let's go back.
You'll probably get scared, but it'll be good. It'll be a memory, that's for sure, and it'll stick with you. And as honestly, as frightening as these situations sound, it also sounds primarily amazing. And for me, it just seems like a real bucket list type experience, right up there with like the bat migration and like all that. I think is important to do. I would love to do it and make sure that we make reservations.
Yeah, well, there's definitely a lot of wonders about this national park. And I think it's probably one of the more underrated national parks in the system.
Yeah, there's a lot of elements here that are underrated and unknown, like the surface trails and so much to do beyond just watching the bats and stuff like that. And then, continuing with the dream vacation stuff, if we survive these narrow, terrifying cave tours, I think it would be really nice to stay at the Trinity Hotel in downtown Carlsbad.
Yes, they were so nice.
Beautiful. Although, keep in mind that when we say downtown, we mean that loosely, and the word downtown
very
is
loose.
In air quotes. There's really not much of a city nearby, and Carlsbad Caverns is technically not in Carlsbad, New Mexico. It's kind of like 20 minutes down the road, But the Trinity Hotel is such a gem. It's along the main street.
Yeah, and it's located in that old bank building.
Yeah, the building used to be an old bank. So it has this classic motif, very vintage looking. And it's not a big hotel. There's only a few boutique rooms upstairs with this restaurant on the ground floor, a very popular restaurant.
Yeah, I was so glad they could, like, squeeze us in.
Yeah,
because
we were,
like,
table.
The last table of the night.
On, like, a Tuesday night or something.
Yeah, like, so we were like, what? Tuesday night?
Yeah, they're killing it. But I'm obsessed with that green chili chicken Alfredo we had when we were there.
Oh,
it was wonderful.
So good. And they had some really good New Mexico wines.
Yes, they did. It was like an all-New Mexico wine list. Very impressive.
And this is right before we were going to the New Mexico Wine Festival in Albuquerque.
Yeah, so really whet our appetites. It was great. So it'd be cool to, like, spend some time there in between cave tours. And then, yeah, that'd be just comfortable and awesome.
So comfortable. And when the bats come out to eat all the mosquitoes, we'll just be gorging on green chilies.
Oh, yeah. I love green chilies as much as bats love mosquitoes.
You've been listening to Parklandia.
The show is created by Matt Kerouac, Brad Kerouac, and Christopher Hasiotis.
Produced and edited by Mike Johns.
And our executive producer is Christopher Hasiotis.
Special thanks to Gabrielle Collins, Crystal Waters, and the rest of the Parklandia crew.
You can keep up with our travels on our Instagram at ParklandiaPod and join the conversation in our Parklandia Rangers Facebook group.
You can find links to all this stuff in the show's notes at parklandiapodcast.com.
Parklandia is a production of iHeartMedia.
Thanks for listening.